Good morning. I'm going to call to order the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division. The clerk is going to note the roll. We do have a quorum. The minutes from the February 18th, 2020 meeting are in the packet. And Representative Brand?
Madam Chair, I move the February 18th, 2020 minutes.
All right. Is there any addition, corrections, discussion about those minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Those minutes are adopted. Today we are spending our day talking about farm stress, farm safety. As you are all well aware, the governor has declared this is Grain Bin Safety Awareness Week, and certainly many people know of instances that happened in this last year where we've had tragic accidents and people that were caught in grain bins or silos, had some instances along those lines, and so we're focusing our attention today on some of those things. There will be a bill at the end of the meeting. Representative Brand has a bill to bring forward, and but we're going to get started. The University of the Minnesota Department of Ag will talk about farm and rural stress, and we've got to begin with Meg Moynihan is here. Good morning, Meg. And she's
good morning, Madam Chair.
And introduce a few people as well.
Some friends.
So at least one of these people is familiar to me, I know, but this is good. So welcome to the committee. We're going to just get kind of an update, and then you've got some introductions to make, and so we appreciate if you just go ahead and get started.
Good morning, Chair Poppy. For the record, my name is Meg Moynihan. I'm a senior advisor at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. For the past 3 years, my emphasis in programming really has been focusing on issues of farm and rural stress in our communities. I think when we started this work, most of our focus was on farmers, and we are understanding very clearly that stressors in agriculture are affecting all of the agricultural community. And you will be no stranger to the fact that the farm economy continues to be a real challenge for all types of producers in Minnesota, and all of the sectors are affected. And this is really a downturn that started 4 and 5 years ago. This is some information I'm showing you from the Economic Research Service that compares net farm income in good times with bad times. And so the period between 2011 and 2013 compared to a couple of years ago, 2016, 2017. And the takeaway there is that the darker the state, the greater the decline in net farm income. And Minnesota is a pretty dark red up there. And so we take this very seriously. But I also want to call your attention to that tangle to the right. And we understand that finances are not the only challenge that farmers face. There are a number of persistent and chronic stressors that really are present even when times are good. And so when we layer these financial strains and insecurities and traumas really on top of some of these chronic stressors, the weather that we have, unpredictability of weather, unpredictability of markets, increasing social isolation, increasing divorce rates, school consolidation. I mean, lots of challenges that farmers really have very little control over, and yet they are struggling all the time to make things work for their farming operations and their families. So that's the context that I wanted to set you up with. Today, I would just want to give you a little update on what we have been up to in the last year at the Department of Agriculture with your support. I was privileged to present to your committee an informational hearing last year, and so we want you to see what strides we've made and perhaps get some of your feedback for things that you'd like us to see doing. But really, we approach our work with some assumptions, and some of these key assumptions are, number one, that different people need different things. Not every farmer in stress needs a mental health counselor. Many do, but some might need medical doctor. Some might need a different accountant. Some might need an off-farm job. Some might need a better attorney. So we recognize that different people have different needs, and that we think our role is to make it as easy as possible to find that kind of help. And it may be a program that the Department of Agriculture offers, but it may be something from Extension. It may be something from Farmers Legal Action Group. It may be the Minnesota State Farm Business Management Program, but we want to help people get to where they need to be as quickly as possible. And we also understand very clearly that lots of support already exists. So there are things that we do not have to create. We don't pretend to create. There are some There are some tremendous programs that have existed since the early 80s that need to continue, and Wayne Pike is here from the Farm Business Management Program, and he will talk about that particular program, but lots already exists. So specifically today, I'd like to talk about some collaborative work we did over the last year that really involved a number of other state agencies, principally the Minnesota Department of Health and also the Minnesota Department of Human Services, but also the Farm Service Agency from USDA, Extension, several nonprofit organizations, and some outside funding that we attracted from both USDA and from the Upper Midwest Center for Ag Safety and Health sister organization, the Great Plains Center for Agricultural Health. We looked at one of the strengths that we have is convening and helping bring together agriculture professionals. And one of our goals is to equip and strengthen agricultural professionals' capacity to help their farmers. We know that there is a whole host of people that farmers already know, trust, and rely on in their local communities. Those people want to be of service and help their producers. They have a vested interest and often a personal interest. So we have focused on ag professionals such as USDA staff, veterinarians, health providers, local social service providers, local agribusiness, co-op service staff, dairy inspectors, you know, people who interact with farmers on a regular basis. We put together three workshops this year, which we delivered in quite a few places around the state. And this map shows you, is kind of color-coded, to which workshop we offered in which location. And I'll start with Safe Talk, which is a three-hour skill-oriented suicide prevention training. And we partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health and several nonprofit organizations to deliver this and to adapt an existing, very proven, evidence-based training for agricultural communities, so it was more relatable. And we started off scheduling six of these sessions, which could have a maximum of 30 people per session. And I will tell you honestly, I thought, who is going to come and to a thing on suicide? It sounds scary. It sounds depressing. I wonder if anybody will show up. And within days, those sessions were full. They were full. We had waiting lists at each location. We added three other sessions, so we ended up with a total of nine sessions. And we still had people on the wait list. So as you will hear, we're looking for ways to continue that outreach and support, because this is something that people are concerned about. They are worried about people that they know and care about, and they want to be in a position to do something. So we ended up with 233 people trained in that program, and we know to date at least four of them since the training did a suicide prevention intervention and intervened in a situation where somebody was at risk of suicide. And that kind of shook me to my core. We also understand that there's a lot of difficult conversations that are going on in agriculture. And there's bad news that has to be delivered and has to be dealt with. And we contracted with the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Community Vitality to put together kind of an experiential workshop to help people prepare for those difficult conversations. And sometimes you're on the receiving end of bad news. Sometimes you're on the giving end of bad news, and both of those can be really incapacitating. And so that training also was very well received, and we had 245 ag professionals at six locations around the state. The third that I want to highlight for you is a workshop that we called Supporting Farm Youth in Stress, and one of my fellow testifiers here is the woman who created and delivered that workshop, and that is Monica McConkie. And that comes out of a concern for what farm youth are experiencing of various ages. We chose to focus on adolescents, and we know that adolescents are going through what their parents are going through. And they may have even less capacity to make sense of it or feel a sense of agency, but they may feel a sense of responsibility. And so our goal with this training was to work with adults who are important in those kids' lives. Could be scout leaders, could be FFA instructors, could be youth ministers, classroom teachers, high school counselors, to help them be better able to recognize and respond to what they might be seeing in farm kids. that might be a little different than what they're seeing, some of the stressors, you know, the day-to-day adolescent stressors that we all have been familiar with. But it's a little different for farm kids. And so perhaps in Monica's remarks, she'll have a chance to talk about that. But that also has been delivered to more than 100 people, and she's now getting requests from other states to come and help do that kind of education. The last program I want to talk about is something I gave you a little bit of a sneak peek on last time I was here, and that is a show that we're extremely proud of that the Department of Agriculture kind of catalyzed together with the Red River Farm Network. But many of you may tune into Don Wick's broadcasts up in northwest Minnesota. And we put together a sponsored radio program of 60 seconds that highlights the experiences of farmers in that region who are willing to talk about challenges they have faced, problems that they have navigated, some which have turned out well and some which have not. But they're brave enough to talk about it and to really give that message to others in the community that you are not alone. You are not alone in what you're going through, and you're not alone in having to go through it by yourself. The most popular programs we've done have been farmers speaking to their challenges. We have 19 episodes up and airing. And in addition to the 60-second primetime radio, so that you hear it when you're in the tractor cab or you're at the dinner table or out in the shop, we have longer interviews, of course, that are what we pulled the 60 seconds from. So we also have podcasts posted that people can listen for free at the Red River Farm Network website. And those tend to be 12 to 15 minutes, but it's kind of a deeper dive into that person's interview. And so far, we have 19 episodes posted, and Don tells me that more than 61,000 people have listened to those episodes. And that's something that we're also hearing feedback from outside the state, and I know of an initiative in South Central Wisconsin where a broadcaster there is trying to do something similar. So these have been, you can see the topics here, everything from, you know, marital relationships, how not to let the farm wreck your marriage, or how not to let the marriage wreck your farm. Life after farming, what happens when you find yourself in a position where you realize that this is untenable, and for various reasons you are going to stop farming. And does life stop? And they are here to tell you, it does not, not in a Pollyanna type way, but in a, I walked through the fire, and yes, it was horrible. And here's where I am now, and actually this is what my life is like, and I'm kind of happy. We've done 3 episodes on suicide to tie back to that. Those are the most listened to episodes that we have. And it started out with Teresa Gilley, who I know testified before your committee in a very emotional testimony last year. She was out of the gate talking about her experience, and a farmer in North Dakota called Don Wick and said, I heard that show about that Mrs. Gilley. And, you know, I lost my son who was 29, and he took his own life. And we haven't been able to really talk about it. This, and hearing her, I think we need to talk about this and tell other people. And so he offered his story. I want to play one clip for you with your indulgence. It's 60 seconds. And it's the story of, I'll let you hear the story, but it's the father of Monica McConkie, who was brave enough to talk about his experience with therapy.
This is Transformation. During the farm crisis days of the 1980s, Bijou, Minnesota farmer Doug Kramer took the proactive step to meet with a therapist.
Well, there was a fella younger than me who was a salesman for farm equipment, and he told me he was going to a therapist, and at first I thought that was kind of a waste of time, but he said how much it helped him, so I thought I'd try it. And the first few times I went, I kind of felt like I didn't want nobody to know and nobody to see me.
Right.
But then after a couple of visits, I guess I didn't care if somebody seen me. I knew I needed help.
When stress becomes too much, take that step to find help. Hear more from Doug and his story in the latest Transformation podcast. You'll find it at rrfn.com/transformation. This is
We don't need to do that again. So that gives you a sample of the types of things that people are hearing. And Don says that he and his staff hear about out in the community. People are talking about this all the time. He said, we've just never done a series that has had such response. So he's very excited about it. And I will tell you that the money that we were able to raise for this just kicked it off. We just supported the first five episodes. And then other support from the local area poured in. And so he's been able to keep it going and growing. So that has been something we're tremendously proud of and a great partnership. Some of the resources that your committee and Chair Poppy, in fact, helped make possible during the last legislative session, you goosed up our ability to do outreach to the tune of $50,000, and I want you to know how we're spending that. We have invested $21,500 in our Minnesota Farm and Rural Helpline, which is a 24-hour service that individuals can call if they're in crisis, if they are feeling like they need a listening ear, if they need financial or legal assistance or guidance or referrals, or if they need help with daily living, food, clothing, daycare, elder care, things like that. We're seeing a lot of activity on the companion website, and we're just in the process of adding text and email function to that so that people who for some reason don't choose to pick up the phone have another way of reaching out and getting support. $12,000 was passed through, indicated that was to go to MinSCU, Minnesota State, I guess it's called now, Minnesota State for professional development of farm business management instructors around these topics. So that contract is in place, or that agreement is in place. We are using $5,000, we anticipate using $5,000 to support more suicide prevention workshops and help community institutions sponsor these in their own communities and kind of take leadership for that with some help with underwriting. And we're doing more advertising, both traditional media, farm papers, rural papers, radio, but also social media to continually promote the resources, the message of not being alone, and some of the other activities that we're doing and offerings. State partnerships, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you, touch on how helpful those have been to us. We, the Minnesota Department of Health was tremendously instrumental in pulling off these suicide prevention training, about which the Department of Ag knew nothing, and now we're in the thick of it. But we also have a very interesting effort that we supported there that they're continuing with, which is taking a look at actual suicide data and fact-checking the national statistics about the farm suicide rate. And our hypothesis was that we're suspecting that people may be undercounted. People who are dying by suicide may be undercounted because of the ways that funeral directors and medical directors code and submit these records. And so they are looking at the actual data, the actual reports of death and the investigations, and they are cross-referencing that with location data and property tax records and looking to see which deaths took place on farms and may have been somebody involved in a farming operation. But like me, who works for the Department of Agriculture, I'm also a dairy farmer. If, God forbid, I should die by my own hand, would the funeral director decide to code me as a state worker or as a farmer? We don't know. So we're trying to get better information about that, and that's going to be actually presented at a National Suicide Prevention Conference this spring. So we're very excited about that. And I have taken up more of my time, I think, than I had intended. But Chair Poppy, if it's all right with you, perhaps we could invite the other testifiers, and then if the committee has questions, we could deal with those then.
Absolutely. Okay. That sounds great.
Thank you very much, Chair Poppy. I'd like to introduce to you Wayne Pike, who is one of our 10 Minnesota Farm Advocates in Minnesota. We've had this program since 1984. It is perhaps more needed now than ever. Wayne's background is in farming. His education started in a one-room schoolhouse. He has been an agriculture instructor and a farm business management instructor, and now he is one of our star farm advocates. So over to you, Wayne.
And I am very pleased to welcome Mr. Pike. He and I were colleagues at Riverland Community College for a number of years, so I'm glad to see that he's continuing in this role, and it seems like such a perfect fit. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Pike.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for having us here. I am one of the 10 farm advocates. I am the junior member among the 10, But I did talk to the other advocates, asked them for input for today's meeting, and I guess the comments that I have as to what we do on a day-to-day basis, they feel it applies to them also. And as we talk about stress, stress does come in all sizes and shapes, treats everyone differently. They react differently to things that happen out there on the farm. And it is certainly impossible to separate that financial stress from the family stress that goes on that I've seen. Farm stress is also a systemic thing. I think of it as kind of a tsunami effect. If you think about what happens in the world, there's an earthquake that causes a tidal wave, and the tidal wave causes floods and disease. And this is kind of the way it happens on the farm. It's one thing leads to another. And oftentimes that really gets farms down. And the cycle, it's always been that way, and yet still it happens, and the stress is the same. I characterize our farm advocate work as we are first responders in a way, that the farmers can call us. It costs them nothing to talk to us. And as our brochure points out, you know, the farmers talking to farmers, farmers helping farmers. And I think all of our farm advocates do have that farm background, so we can communicate very quickly with and link up with them and offer our assistance. And just on a daily basis, I can tell you a few of the things that I have been called to do since last July when I started at Farm Advocate. They go from relatively simple to very, very complex situations. I was early in my career as a farm advocate. I was called to do a relatively simple balance sheet and cash flow for a couple that had been farming for 30 years. They were in their 50s, but they never had to do a balance sheet or a cash flow in the past. And the banker had always done one, or they just functioned without them. And they more or less were in a state of panic as to what they were going to do because they needed to find financing somewhere else. So that was probably a three-hour thing, and we took care of it. And hopefully they learned who they could talk to, because then I would tell them, okay, go to the Farm Business Management Program at Riverland. That's what they do on a daily basis. You'll have it done. I've helped on two cases related to young farmers attempting to get financing for land from FSA, and they were concerned that they were going to get the best terms that they possibly could. They didn't know the questions to ask. They didn't know quite how to pursue that. And one of the things I find with being a farm advocate, you know, we represent the farm in that we can give advice to them, but what we say doesn't bind the farmer to anything. So we can ask all kinds of questions that normally in a business situation you probably wouldn't think of as being appropriate, but we can ask them. And we get a lot of cooperation from the people that we do need to talk to. We do come up with some people call with production questions, and they're just wondering, you know, who do I talk to lower my fertilizer cost? And again, is my agronomist telling me the right thing? Well, we can direct them to somebody within our network that is an expert in that. And I had a guy ask me about hemp production. I don't know anything about hemp production, but we visited for a while, and it occurred to me that there are people that that do know about that, and I directed him to that. Tenant and landlord disputes are fairly common. We get those. A young lady was in a dispute with her landlord. Turns out there was nothing we could do for her. The landlord was exercising his legal rights, and it was just a matter of, okay, now what are you going to do? And giving her some ideas along that line. I helped in an estate settlement dispute that was between family members. The problem seemed to be pretty much based just on hurt feelings. And after visiting with the principal person involved, it turned out that that's all that was required. We talked for a couple hours, went to a meeting with the rest of the family members, and it finally settled down where it got settled. Recently, I was called in after the sudden death of a family member who was the key operator on an operation, it left the rest of the family really out to sea because they had no idea what to do next. He was the main record keeper. He was the main operator, made day-to-day decisions on marketing and everything else, and it was just a matter of, Ken, what should we do? And putting out a plan generally for everybody, okay, they're tossed into this turmoil and without a plan. So making a plan for them is often such a relief to them that, okay, now we know what to do, now we know who to talk to, and we can go from there. Had one case started out as a financial thing in an estate that we thought was financial. It turned out to be mostly a family discord thing between the farming person and the rest of the non-farming family. And eventually it turned into an animal welfare case. The non-farming people, when I went with them to the farm, did not recognize that the animals were starving. And there was no feed for them and no money to buy feed. So having made them aware of that, then that was a problem that got resolved then too. And probably among the more very common ones and more complex, I'm currently working with three situations on the farm, and they go from anywhere from the mediation portion all the way to up through and to bankruptcy. So those are relatively complex things which require quite a bit of time, a lot of stress involved, and a lot of networking that we've got to work on. And two out of those three involved cases where we called in Ted Matthews to offer some help with the family that was getting some help from him. And I'm sure that Monica will talk about the family problems with divorce. I've noticed more of that recently among young people, and that's a communication thing among others, but it's more common than when I started 45 years ago or whatever. Farm boys don't marry farm girls most of the time anymore, or and vice versa, not to be sexist. The expectations are different. I see it. I'm down by Rochester. A lot of the there are people who work for the Mayo Clinic. Their peers are going off to Mexico. They go back to the farm and feed cows with their check. And that causes some stress and a lot of tension in that. Finally, as I've talked to the other farm advocates and my former colleagues in farm business management, I find that most of us share the opinion that the farm economic situation is not going to get much better anytime soon. Right now, as of today, farmers are still finding out that they're not going to get operating credit for this year. That's come quite a bit later than usual because we had such a late fall, the harvest is late, and we are finding that this is probably the tip of the iceberg, and we are going to get flooded very soon. The lenders have told me that, FSA, Farm Service Agency people have mentioned that. They're surprised how not busy they've been up to this time, but we know that that time is coming. And part of this, I've noticed too, out of desperation, some farmers are going to fall prey to some questionable lending practices, which is just going to make their situation worse in the future. So the Farm Advocate Program, I found, is really very useful, and I found it very rewarding being able to get these calls and to help people and to help them make better decisions, and hopefully leads to less stress and less farmers leaving the business and healthier families and healthier communities. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pike. All right. You can introduce the next person.
Chair Poppe and members, I would like to introduce to you Monica McConkie, who I know that you know Ted Matthews, who has been our rural mental health counselor for many, many years, and through the support of this committee and Chair Poppe, we were able to increase the funding for MNSCU to bring Monica McConkie on board to do some of that work, and so she's here today to meet you.
Very good. Welcome to the committee, and just state your name and
Monica McConkey, and the new rural mental health specialist, I guess. I'm very honored to be here and meet you all. I thought I would just give a little bit of an introduction of myself and my background, and then talk a little bit about what I'm seeing out there since I begin on October 1st. So you heard my dad's voice on the little clip. I got to say, I got a little emotional hearing that. But grew up on a farm in northwest Minnesota near Bijou, Manoman County, and it was a century farm in 2015, so they started in 1915, currently fifth generation, so my parents, brother, and nephew are operating the farm at this time. So I grew up very active in the farming operation, in 4-H and FFA and all of that good stuff, which added to my life in a way that, you know, is revealed to me even now at 48 years old. And my kids, I have three teenagers, and they're all 4-H'ers as well. So after high school, I went on to get degrees in psychology and counseling. And then really for the next 12 years, I provided direct service to primarily children, adolescents, and families, so family therapy. After that 12 years, I went on to more administrative positions through an agency based out of Bemidji called Stellar Human Services. And I ended my time there the last 2 years. I was the director of that agency. Then about 5.5 years ago, I went over to Prairie St. John's in Fargo, North Dakota, which is a psychiatric inpatient hospital and substance use residential treatment facility. And there I was their director of business development. So new program development, grant writing, all of the marketing. So I met with community partners every day throughout Minnesota and North Dakota. And through that role, I met Meg and actually started doing some speaking on farm stress while I was still at Prairie. So forward to October 1, when I came on board as the rural mental health specialist, it's been incredible. I feel like I've kind of come full circle and am back home in a sense. So I meet with farmers on their farms, and when I say farmers, it's broad. It could be a farm spouse, farmer themselves, some connection to that farmer, a child of a farmer. But I've met on the farm. With them, we meet in neutral locations, that's within their comfort zone, a lot of phone contact. So I have phone calls with folks who call me and they're struggling, they're overwhelmed, they're frustrated, fairly emotional. And sometimes we talk on the phone for half an hour, sometimes we're on the phone for 2 hours. It's whatever they need and whatever helps them kind of get through that. So I would say overall, I just wrote down kind of three top items that I'm seeing when I'm working with farmers. And the first is just that anxiety and depression. So they're dealing with chronic stress. They're having difficulties making decisions. Some are really frozen. They don't open their mail when the mail comes, especially if it's from a regulatory agency. It goes on the pile on the desk. So I've even been on the phone with farmers, and they've opened their mail with me on the phone, and we just kind of talk through it and what that means. Relationship issues, which were already mentioned, very common. Marriage issues, relationships with children, especially if they're children that are now adult children and moving into the farm operation. Just a lot of stress out there that's putting strain on relationships. And the other piece I'm seeing connected to the anxiety and the depression is an increase in substance use. So I see especially the alcohol use increasing as a coping strategy. And so we work on that. We work on thinking, positive thinking, coping, building positive reinforcement in your life so you can better cope with stress. And obviously it doesn't fix commodity prices or the weather, but as I explained to the farmers, it'll help you cope better with those uncontrollables. Meg had brought up the supporting farm youth training, and that was really a great experience. And just to let you know, just a little bit of the content in that training, it's a three-hour, we always run over, but the plan was for it to be a three-hour training, and we include talking about unique stressors of farming and farm youth, including traumas that are experienced on the farm, which is regular. It's a regular occurrence on farms to see accidents, injuries, deaths, natural disasters, those kind of traumatic events. We talk a bit about adolescent brain development and how that impacts the role that farm youth play on the farm. And we also get into building relationships with farm youth to better understand them and help them. And we end with an hour of suicide prevention using the QPR, question, persuade, refer training. So I guess that's all I had jotted down. Welcome any questions you might have. And again, I'm just so thankful for this opportunity, and I'm honored to be here.
Thank you, Ms. McConkey. It's great to have you and great to meet you. We have seen Ted a few times, so it's nice to have now the second person. So thanks for the work you're doing. We do have some questions. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, to the testifiers, you're doing some really important work, and you're doing a great job. Thank you. Mrs. McConkey, it's really nice to meet you and for you to be here today. I have two questions, but I'll ask them at the same time. We've heard for a couple of years that Ted is closing in on retirement. He keeps pushing that back and pushing that back. So I'm wondering if you could update us on that and if we're recruiting someone to take his place. And then I'm also wondering if you and Ted are enough or if we need more rural mental health specialists.
Ms. McConkey.
Good questions. Well, I don't know if it's really public knowledge what Ted's plans are, but I've heard he's about 2 years out, so not actively recruiting at this time, as far as I know. And are Ted and I enough? That's a really interesting question. Some weeks I think we need more, and some weeks I think this is working. So it comes in waves. But one goal of mine, I guess, is to really look at building capacity within our rural communities to serve our farmers. And what that means to me is training our helping professionals to be agriculturally competent, because I think that's a barrier to farmers accessing not just mental health, but to really talk about the issues that they're experiencing to their primary care physician, to their pastor, to other helping professionals in the community. So there are some things in the works to really address that, and that would remove a barrier potentially in our rural communities to open up some access when Ted and I just aren't enough and when we can't get there.
Thank you.
Representative Poston. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank you so much for all the work you're doing. I'm a clergy person in my other life. I'm also someone who's had a family member commit suicide. And it's really difficult to talk about your life when it's not going well. It's very difficult for those who are surrounding someone who's feeling increasingly trapped to feel equipped about how to talk with them, support them, help them. And the agricultural competency piece, I think, is really important for leaders and support people in various communities, because it's really important when you reach out for help to feel like you're being heard and understood, and that can be a key barrier. So thank you. I have one question related to the Safe Talk conversations. I was really moved that that's happening and just the response to it. Do you have, can you say more about who all is attending? And do you have stories about what's happened after those sessions? What's been the, do you have any sense of what the impact has been of those conversations?
Mm-hmm. Ms. Moynihan.
Madam Chair and Representative Lippert, thank you for that question. And I am very pleased to tell you that we've seen a lot of clergy at those sessions. We have seen veterinarians. We have seen mental health counselors. We have seen employees of large dairy cooperatives. We've seen dairy inspectors, and we've seen a huge cross-section. Lots of staff from USDA have attended. Some of our staff from state agencies have attended. And so they seem to be united by recognizing that this is a danger and wanting to know what kind of role they could play in preventing that. And really the focus is on them being someone who keeps the person safe until they get to the kind of long-term assistance they need. So Safe Talk is about recognizing and responding and learning to say the word suicide and learning to say the word kill yourself and ask those questions in an honest way so that the person who's maybe contemplating that feels like they will be heard and they will be respected for the challenge that they're facing and that this is somebody they could trust to say, this is serious. We need to find some help because this is a real situation. I do a follow-up survey. I'm kind of an evaluation fanatic. So I do an evaluation survey after every program that we do. And when I got the responses from Safe Talk, one of the questions is, you know, would you recommend this to a colleague or a coworker? 85% of people are recommending this. And then I say, what is something that you're planning to do now? What have you taken away that you want to do? And they want other people to know what they've learned. They want to share what they've learned. They want to compile the resources in their own community so that if they are in this situation and they see someone who needs help, they know where to get that person for help. So one woman wrote and said, I went back to my office in the afternoon, and I typed up little lists of all the keep safe resources in our community and shrunk them down so that we can all wear them in the back of our badges so that if this happens, we know what to do and we know where to turn. So there were immediately, apart from the four interventions, which people offer that information, I didn't say, you know, what's happened, have you saved any lives? But it was offered to us that we have responded and we were in a situation that now we recognized that somebody was giving us some signals that this was a danger. And maybe it's not something they say, maybe it's a way they're acting or a way they're not acting. And this person felt brave enough because they had practiced asking questions out loud in that training that they could say, I have to ask you, are you thinking about suicide? And the person said yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When Ms. McConkie was talking about farmers not wanting to open up their mail for fear of what might be in there, I couldn't help but think about we at the state here sending out letters, Department of Revenue is what I'm talking about, to farmers, thousands of farmers that are getting surprise letters owing thousands of dollars on their 2018 or 2019 tax statements. And it just behooves me to encourage all of us to get these things done in a timely fashion. So whether it's, you know, and this is not the tax committee, I realize that, but there's things we can do here at the state that would certainly help these situations. Whether it's the 179 tax exemptions or RFA funding, we need to get those things done in a timely fashion. And my question would go to Meg Moynihan. What's the protocol if somebody, a farmer, would call into the hotline? I had seen a study someplace that said a farmer would rather talk to somebody in person than on the telephone. So if somebody calls in, what's the protocol? Do they get hooked up right away with Ted or Ms. McConkie, or how do you get that one-to-one contact with these people?
Ms. Moynihan.
Chair Poppe and Representative Anderson, excellent question. There are three simple options. When somebody calls that telephone number day or night, if they are struggling emotionally, they press 1 and they are immediately connected to First Call for Help Itasca, which is the provider that we use. They are trained in crisis response and in empathetic listening and those types of skills. So this could be at 10 o'clock in the morning. It could be at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, whatever. If their second option is for help with needs of daily living. So I think I alluded to before, Some farmers don't have enough to eat right now. Some farmers are finding that they need to take, somebody needs to take a second off-farm job and are need to find childcare that they can afford. Many farmers are dealing with aging parent issues. And so that is the second option. And the third option is if they are calling about financial, business, or legal matters, then during business hours they come to the Department of Agriculture, and we have three staff people, two in the Rural Finance Authority and one in the division in which I work, who answer those calls, and they're really kind of a referral. They can listen to the issue and say, you know, if it's a legal issue, perhaps recommend Farmers Legal Action Group. If it is a business issue or a loan issue, can get them to RFA, so really can help to sort of triage those calls that are business and financial related. That service is not 24 hours a day, but the crisis response is. And I do know, if I'm not speaking out of turn, that those crisis responders do have Ted and Monica's contact information, and so they also make referrals if they feel that this is something that's not going to be taken care of in a 20-minute phone call. They can call that person back and or refer them to Ted and Monica and make that connection for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thank you for being here. Monica, you were online in McIntosh, Minnesota, when we had an awareness program provided through Polk County, actually Nursing Service. So I think my biggest surprise was, it's a small town, but there were people entirely from the, from Polk County is a fairly large county physically and very agricultural, and the room was absolutely packed with all kinds of business people as well as farmers. And they do see the stress level in the rural, just in Main Street as well. But you mentioned something that I'd like to point out. I've talked to a physician. We have struggles keeping physicians in rural areas, but this physician happened to tell me that he really, his colleagues are like, why are you up there? Life is a different job. He works 16 hours a day often, and is on call many weekends. But the one thing he said to me was, I like working with my patients because when they come in and they're sick or something's not right, I know it. Even before they say something to me, I know it. I know something, in, whether it's a physical problem or mental, emotional. And I think it's important that we make sure that our medical professionals, whether it is a physician or a nurse or, you know, they we do know each other, so we can see. In fact, I'll relate, a gentleman, my neighbor, is going to retire. And the guys are kind of his age group, are a little envious, but it's tough because his son decided not to stay on the farm. Too much challenges. And they're all like, oh, he's doing so well. Things are, you know. And I said, is he really? And I happened to have a one-on-one with him, and his eyes welled up with tears. And I said, just don't forget to let the guys know that this is challenging too. They have coffee all the time, and I actually alerted a couple of farmers, you know, be a little careful when you're teasing him, and because this is a change he wasn't really planning on. And a generational farm, and his mother's still around, so I think he's challenged with that. But what I would like to point out is in northwestern Minnesota, of course, we have the educational branch of working with farmers and helping them financially. But also, I believe, have you been able to connect with the Northwest Mental Health Center and their expansion on what they're doing with mental health and agriculture in general?
Ms. McConkey.
Chair Poppy, Representative Keel. Yes, I've worked with Shauna Reitmeier, who's the executive director there at the center, as well as a peer of hers, Brenda Mack, and we've hosted some farmer visits, on-farm farmer coffee chat type of things. So, yes, they're colleagues of mine, and we work closely together.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Chair Poppy. I would just like to, it really has expanded what we need to do, and of course it really helps that Shauna Reitmeier has come back, and with her expertise, she's a part of the farm community also with her background, and actually used to babysit my kids. So in just, I'm just really pleased to see the availability of the different types of things we can do to help you, Monica, because I know that this is, there's enough services far and few between. But as we work to help people and recognize what they need help with, and once again, I'm going to point out that it's not just, you know, being a farmer. I know this is important, dear to my heart, but it is also very important for our small businesses up and down the valley, Minnesota in general, how important it is for them because they're also challenged.
All right, we've got a couple more comments or questions to Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I want to echo my colleagues' thanks for the work that you're doing. It's obviously very, very important work, and we really respect the difficulties and achievements that you're making by doing it. So thank you very much for that. I have a quick question. I was at FarmFest this summer. I was really impressed at the large, very visible out front display of discussion about mental health and agriculture that was there. And I thought it was really great to see that there and really impactful. And so what kind of response are you seeing from farmers at events like that? Is it do people come up and talk to you when you're at events about the issues that they're facing, or is it more of a follow-up kind of thing that people just are getting awareness? And what kind of response are you seeing when you're at places like that? Thank you.
Ms. Moynihan or
Chair Poppe, I'll take a crack at that, Representative. We go as many places as we can, and if I can't go, colleagues from the Department of Agriculture go, or we send information with partners like the Upper Midwest Ag Center for Ag Safety and Health, who we'll talk in a little while. And so it's really a joint effort. As to what kind of response we get, sometimes it's difficult to tell in the moment. If there is a discussion or a panel, I always think whoever comes is the right people. Sometimes, as Representative Keel pointed out, rooms are packed. Sometimes there are a few people. Sometimes everybody's leaning back with their arms crossed and you can't quite tell what they're thinking. Sometimes they come up afterward and have something that they want to discuss privately. So frequently there aren't questions asked, you know, by raising hands. Sometimes that happens, but a lot of it happens kind of in the shadows. And I will also say that sometimes at events when materials are out, Farm Bureau meeting, Farmers Union meetings and things, if you're at the table, nothing moves. But as soon as there's a break and everybody is eating, if you come back, all of the literature has disappeared. And so I don't think it is people that are nefariously taking our literature. I think it's people who want it but don't want to be seen taking it. So we know that some organizations, we have a Coping with Farm and Rural Stress brochure, for example. It highlights our programs at the department, but also a lot of others, University of Minnesota, UMass, other partners. And so they like distributing that. And so we've printed at least 25,000. We have an order for 10,000 more. And some educators now just tuck it into people's registration packets. So you don't have to take it, you just get it. And if you don't need it, I guarantee you, you know somebody who does need it. So we're trying to cover all bases that way. Thank you.
All right, two more questions. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to, like everyone else here, just say thank you for the really important work that you're doing. My brother-in-law is the grain elevator manager, but he's also the fire chief. And he, because he can see what people are planning, he can see what people are bringing in, he can see the change in their body language. And while he himself is the king of silence, he's always that blank face, not letting people know what he's thinking. He has often tried to find ways to reach out for help for individuals who are in need. And when you're thinking about your trusted peer partners in the community, I'm wondering if the grain elevators are considered those trusted peers also, because they do see that. And I think this whole concept of destigmatizing need of help, whether it's mental, financial, whatever it is, and everybody needs something sometime, I think is just terrific. And I just wanted to say, teaching people to have those difficult conversations with their friends and their neighbors, maybe just how do you teach them those open, this is not a question, but it's just more a statement. How do you teach them to have those, hey, I'm really concerned about Jim down the road, and is there confidential referrals that they can, a confidential referral hotline or something that they could alert you to say, hey, I'm worried about Jim?
Ms. Boynihan.
Representative Poppe and Representative, if I could respond to that last question really got me thinking about that. When we promote the Farm and Rural Helpline, we encourage people to call if there's someone else that they're concerned about. So maybe it's not you. Maybe you're worried about somebody and you don't know what to say, what to do, who you could turn to, and you need somebody to talk through kind of a strategy with. So that is an important point. And I just also want to mention that Monica will be presenting at the Minnesota Feed and Grain Association meeting coming up next month. So we're on it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good to see you, Ms. Moynihan.
Representative.
Sorry, I missed most of your presentation, but I have a couple questions, and it's in terms of how do we replicate what you're doing in other areas. Last fall, on one day, we lost two law enforcement officers to suicide on one day in Minnesota. And can we take your model and maybe replicate it with law enforcement to help provide that access? And the second part is, sometimes when suicide strikes in schools, there's a clustering or a delayed mm-hmm. clustering effect. And can we do a similar and counseling in schools, and I know this isn't the education committee, but is there a way where your group or we could replicate something like what you're doing when there are issues in the schools that we had something similar in South St. Paul where we had a series in a cluster, and to try to engage the way you're engaging with the farm community, can we elsewhere in our state where there may be high risk or can we replicate it somehow? That's my question.
So Ms. McConkie, or do you want to?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Hansen. That's a good question. The Department of Health has specific programming in multiple areas of I don't know, demographics, I guess you could say, where they're providing suicide prevention training. So whether it's first responders or youth or tribal members, they've been working on that. We've worked with them closely on the Safe Talk trainings that the department has offered and provided. It is true that in rural areas, some of the farmers I work with are also volunteer firefighters. And so you don't have only the stress of your farming, you have the trauma of what they see as first responders, and that's a lot. It's a lot for them to take on, especially when the farming side is stressful, then they don't have an out. So that is definitely something that we see. And it's been exciting in some of the smaller communities around the state. The fire departments and the faith communities have been the initiators of community-focused suicide prevention trainings. And so I've gone to a few, and I know Ted does too, where we just do an hour training in a parish hall, and it was sponsored by the fire department. So that community-wide initiative is really, I think, valuable and necessary in these rural areas. And addressing the school piece, you're right. Sometimes there is kind of that cluster effect or repeat, and research shows that the first year after either a death by suicide or a suicide attempt is really critical, not only for the person that maybe has attempted, they're at increased risk per year, but if you think of the ripples going out from that individual, anyone associated with them is at increased risk for a year, because of the trauma they experience, just knowing about or relating to that attempt or death. So in Minnesota, we have, through the Department of Human Services, a really great school-based mental health program. We have mobile mental health crisis teams that will respond. So I think the cross-department collaboration has been really, really invaluable, and other states don't see it like we see it here. I mean, other states, Department of Ags are not doing suicide prevention trainings in their states. It's just not even heard of. So I think we have a good system. There's always more work to be done.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you for taking time to drive here today and be a part of the presentation. Very important work, and you've highlighted, you know, why we felt such an urgency last year to do something about this, and so we appreciate that you were able to come today and share, and Mr. Pike as well. The farm advocates are important to the whole spectrum of how people are responded to. So thank you all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we're going to adjust the schedule just a bit because we do have Representative Brand. We want to make sure that bill gets heard and the testifiers are able to be here. And he's brought other students and other people, so they're all kind of here for this purpose. And so I'm going to ask Representative Brand to go ahead. Representative Brand.
Good morning, members of the committee. I've got House File 3224 today, and I've also got an author's amendment. I'm asking that this be laid over for possible inclusion in the supplemental finance bill.
So you're moving that House File 3224 be laid over for possible inclusion in supplemental finance bill. Okay.
Yep.
And then you have an amendment?
Yep, I have an amendment as well. There is a small drafting error in the number of dollars and that sort of thing that people are able to use for this. So I would move A1 amendment to also be allowed to be on the bill.
All right. So the A1 amendment is before us. We have it in our packet. There was a bit of a larger amount that was put into the bill, and that's been reduced by this. So any other questions, comments? Okay, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. That motion prevails. So we have that bill now before us, so please present your bill and introduce your witnesses.
Thank you very much, colleagues. I'd like to introduce House File 3224, which essentially resurrects the tractor rollover protection pilot program from 2016 and establishes a $500,000 amount for the purposes of safety grants to be allowed to be for farmers, and then $250,000 for educational programs. It's a pretty simple bill. I've got a whole bunch of students that are here today from St. Peter High School from Nicollet County, where I represent. The majority of them wrote letters to me asking that Senator Nick Frentz and I do something to turn this tragedy that happened in Nicollet County back in August into something positive. Back in August 14th, we lost a young man in our district, Landon Grand, in a grain bin accident. And he was a high school senior. And the folks that are with us today are from the St. Peter High School, good friends of Landon's. Beside me, I've got Michelle Grand. That would be Landon Grand's mother. And James Grand, that's Landon's brother. And I'm asking today that we have some testimony, and we talked about how we can pass some grain bin safety legislation, Landon's Law, we're calling it, to be passed. And so I would like to turn it over in the interest of time to Michelle and James, and they can go from there.
Well, first of all, welcome to the committee, and our deepest condolences to you from the entire committee. These tragedies affect all of us, but certainly as a family member, you are deeply impacted. So our deepest and most sincere condolences. And when you're ready, please just go ahead and.
I'm sorry. This has been since August that I've been fighting for this. So it's to get to this point is really surreal.
Well, again, we appreciate that you've traveled here to be able to provide testimony.
I don't want his death to be in vain. changes to farming. Safety measures are so important. It's long overdue that these equipment that the farmers are working with have proper safety applied to existing equipment that they have. They're not in the financial spot to replace their equipment. The equipment needs to be adapted. Our son was caught in a sweep auger. It was a gear-driven sweep auger that caught his legs. And he succumbed to his injuries in a green bin, alone, for hours, alone. OSHA's regulations say that at all times, two people should be together. But this farming operation, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there's a lot of different farming operations out there that are large farms. Nowadays, you don't find a 200-acre farm that is economically making it. These farms are growing to a size that is probably something that nobody can ever imagine, that their equipment out in the fields could be $2 million or more running up and down the field. But these farmers that are running this equipment are also claiming to be small farmers, which are falling under OSHA's regulations where they don't have to come out and investigate my son's death, which I believe was preventable. If this farmer would have been following OSHA's regulations of the buddy system, possibly my son may be alive today, and I wouldn't be here. I would fall asleep at night hearing him crying for me. Came out of the womb farming. I mean, the first words were. And that's what his father and I wanted him to pursue. And we put our money into the farm for our next generation. James isn't a farmer. He was a Power Ranger freak. And we are not going to make him follow something that's our dream, not his. So in turn, we have to make adjustments to our farming. We're hog farmers. We are selling our hog barns. We can't do it alone anymore. But this operation where my son was killed at goes on farming like there was nothing that happened, because he is protected by workman's comp and OSHA, which I believe needs to be updated to modern day. It's time. It's been 60 years in the making of getting this updated to the times that we are dealing with now. Farming has changed. The laws need to be changed to protect us also. We struggled.
Yes. Thank you again for coming forward and sharing your story, very tragic story. Does James, would you like to speak as well?
Yeah. Hello, I am James Gron. I'm a senior at St. Peter High School and the brother of Landon Gron. Me and Landon both grew up on the farm, working on it every day. And we have multiple grain bins right in our front yard, and they're they look innocent enough, you don't see the danger that they hold inside, and you just don't know the danger until it's right in your face. Growing up, you talk to farmers, everybody knows somebody. And it's almost come as a fact of life, and I don't think that it needs to be. We shouldn't think about trying to prevent it happening, but what do we do when it does? And I think that this is a great way to try and break that, try and get over that hump of just hoping it doesn't happen to what do we do when it does.
Yes, thank you. That is the idea.
And another thing I wanted to add was, you know, there are so many different ideas that I alone have come up with for safety that could be implemented on a farm. I'm not a farm girl. I grew up in town, a small little town in South Dakota called Ipswich. Mm-hmm. It's a town of about 800 people. I never grew up around farming. I married into it. And I can see from even our son's death, the way he died, this wheat auger needs to be covered fully from one end to the other. It doesn't need to be made out of steel or anything. It needs to make enough room for grain to go through, but not a foot or a hand or to be caught so someone could get killed. This was not an entrapment. My son was found on an empty grain bin floor.
Mm-hmm.
Very little grain in the bin. He shouldn't have been in. So that's... I'm working with an engineer on making a life-saving bracelet for farmers, similar to an iWatch medical alert bracelet, such something similar to that. Where a farmer working alone, they could plug it in like an iWatch, put it on in the morning as they go out if they're working alone. They get into trouble, they can hit one button, will turn on signal to an antenna, it'll turn off the power to the equipment, another button to push 911. They have a chance. The engineer that I'm working with is my brother. He said this is so simple, he does not understand why this hasn't been a reality already. And another thing is like the safety harnesses. I've talked to Farm Bureau shortly after my son's death, which is an audience of mostly over 70s, which are still farming. And I asked them, would you put on a harness, a safety harness that might take you 10, 15 minutes to put on for what you believe is a 5-minute job?
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a hand raised. It has to be something simple. You know, it's just, I don't know, this is, I feel like... the preventable needs to be prevented.
Mm-hmm.
If we can. And I'm a mama on a mission. I'm not going to stop here. I want it to go federally. And if Minnesota could be the start of this, to get this going across the country. I talked to a lady from Indiana lately, and I don't know if I'm going over my time either, but I have talked to a lady from Indiana lately that lost her 18-year-old son in a grain entrapment in November. And so it's everywhere. It's not just here. It needs to go to the federal level where we get safety for farmers. We're the backbone of this country, and people don't realize that chocolate milk doesn't come from a chocolate cow. You know, it comes down to people need to understand how important farming is. And our farmers are not only dying from this, they're dying from the economic part of this. Where they can't pay their bills, their marriages are going down. This is very stressful on a marriage.
I can understand that, definitely.
Yes.
So again, thank you for coming forward, for sharing your story, for there's just nothing that we can say that will make it easier, but no. But we feel for you. Our hearts are breaking. Representative Brand.
After the death of Landon, the Northland community came together and they lined up a whole bunch of tractors next to the road. The community came together. That was a show of support for the Brand family. Just like today with the St. Peter students that showed up, again, the community comes together. It's really one of the attributes of my district that I really enjoy. And so I'm hoping that my community here today will also come together. We can pass this bill and allocate the money for safety. And so
thank you. Before you do, I know that Josie Linetti also wanted to provide some testimony. So we'll have her come down to testify from Minnesota Farm Bureau and Stu Laurie from Farmers Union. Yes, okay. Welcome to the committee. Josie.
I'll be brief, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Josie Linetti with the Minnesota Farm Bureau. We thank Representative Brand for bringing this bill forward today. We've certainly heard of the serious and continued financial and emotional challenges in agriculture. And Minnesota Farm Bureau is a grassroots general farm organization. We have 78 county farm bureaus. And I just wanted to briefly touch on the activities that our county farm bureaus do in terms of safety. They've assisted with 24 farm safety camps, reaching nearly 5,000 students and nearly 400 adults. Our Minnesota Farm Bureau Foundation, in partnership with Turtle Plastics, has donated 10 grain bin rescue tubes to community fire departments throughout Minnesota. So, and there's a number of other things that I could discuss as well, but we're here today just in support of Representative Brand's bill and the importance of having this conversation on farm safety. We support efforts to reduce farm injuries and death through engineering, education, and voluntary programs. So really, Representative Brand, thank you for bringing this bill forward. We appreciate it. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Linetti. And Mr. Laurie.
Thank you, Chair Poppy and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I'm the Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And just want to add our voice as Farmers Union and strong support for this bill. I know, Mrs. Grant, we have a grassroots development process for a policy, too. And our members, a number of them, brought your letter to that meeting to discuss and said that this needs to be at the center of what we work on. This session, and so we're here to follow you and Representative Brand and Senator Frentz, and thank you so much for your leadership and are eager to express our support for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I would concur. It's the center of the work, and it's the heart of our work, certainly, is to make sure that we have our farmers are safe and that farm families aren't needing to deal with these tragedies. Representative Brand, so you'd like to?
Yes, I'd like to renew my motion to hold the bill over for possible inclusion in the supplemental finance bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Brand, for bringing this bill. Thank you, Mrs. Grant, and to James for coming to share the story. And thank you to the St. Peter students. You know, it's a tough day, and I know it's been a tough number of weeks. So our hearts are with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the, seeing no further discussion, House File 3224, it will be, as amended, is laid over. We will have MDA come forward. They will give some information about the ROPS program, which is really what Representative Brand's bill is dealing with, and Department of Labor and Industry, I believe, as well, to talk about what they're doing for farm safety. So, Mr. Chesseth, we'll just begin with you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peter Chesseth. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Just briefly, I bring greetings from Commissioner Peterson, who was very sorry he was unable to be here this morning, but looks forward to working with the committee and Representative Brand and other stakeholders on this critical issue. In light of time, I'd just like to pass it over to Mr. Huguenin.
Welcome, Mr. Huguenin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you so much for the opportunity to give you a brief update on where we're at with the ROPS program that this committee has supported and funded in the past. And if I might, I'd just like to start by adding our condolences to those of the committee, to Landon's family and all of his friends and classmates here today. As this committee knows, the ROPS program is a pilot program that you all funded starting in fiscal year 17 and 18. A total of $400,000 was appropriated for this program. All of the appropriated money has been spent. We also, part of the language, it includes the ability to collect private contributions. We collected nearly $50,000 in private donations from companies like CHS and Land O'Lakes and others that we were able to use to extend this program as well. The basic parameters of the program, these are for tractors built before 1987, and the provision allowed us to reimburse 70% of the cost that the farmer pays to install a ROPS system on that tractor. It also caps the farmer's out-of-pocket expense to $500 per tractor. So a look at the results for combining those two appropriations. So just under 400 tractors received rollover protection systems. Pretty widespread participation around the state. We had farmers from 63 different counties participate. And the average cost share payment back to the farmer was approximately $1,100. So farm kids like me will not be surprised that the most common models of tractors that received kits were John Deere 4020s and John Deere 3020s. The bill you just heard would obviously extend this program. The original language was a pilot program, and that expired this last June 30th. And just a couple of comments to lead into Ms. Shasso's testimony that will follow from UMASH. You know, one of the challenges that exists around farm safety is that statistics can be difficult to come by, accurate statistics. Purdue University's Agriculture Safety and Health Program estimates that something like 30% of all incidents go unreported, which makes it difficult for policymakers and others to kind of get their arms around just the magnitude of the issue that faces us. Using Purdue statistics, the national average is about 27 confined space fatalities per year across the country. Grain bins accounted for roughly half of that number. Just based on media reports, in Minnesota alone in 2019, there were at least 8 confined space fatalities. Just a quick note about what makes this year, you know, 2019, 2020, especially dangerous. As all of you know, 2019 harvest was incredibly difficult for farmers. It was late. It was very wet. The high moisture content of stored grain certainly contributes to issues like clumping and mold, et cetera, that makes grain bins even more difficult. And as Mr. Pike testified in his testimony, the high farm stress levels that farmers are under due to prices, due to weather, et cetera, I think Mr. Pike's words were that stress can be systemic and that it affects other decisions and things that farmers are dealing with. And so that was just a quick overview of where we're at with ROPS and a little bit of kind of some of the other numbers related to farm safety. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We will go on to Ms. Shasso. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for having us, and thank you for the emphasis on agricultural safety and health today. So today I will be talking about agricultural safety and health broadly from our perspective. So we are the Upper Midwest Agricultural Safety and Health Center, which I will call UMASH. So first I want to emphasize why this is important and why we're here today. When we look at some of the outcomes, agricultural workers are 8 times more likely to die on the job. And aside from that, they're more likely to be injured, especially when you're considering livestock operations, which is very common in Minnesota. To state the problem simply, there are too many incidents happening. And we have seen this particularly in the news in the past few years, and we've heard those stories directly from the families here today. As Paul mentioned, it can be difficult to track these incidents. Some of them will only get reported in local news events like we've seen here. To provide some additional context, I'll turn to the commonly reported injuries and fatalities in the state of Minnesota. Here we can really understand the context of what's happening on Minnesota farms. We can think of this data as informal surveillance. So we can see that the top five most common incidents have been fairly consistent over the past few years, but we see that spike in grain bin and silo incidents in 2019. These other categories, however, emphasize the need for broad agricultural work, and this should really, really reaffirm the issues that we need to work on. The news only captures a very small portion of what is actually happening on the agricultural landscape today. And it really shows that everything that we hear about and see is really just the tip of the iceberg. So I think when we approach agricultural and farms health and safety, we need a broad approach that accounts for the diversity and frequency of incidents on our landscape. The UMASH approach is an interdisciplinary one, so we operate on one health principles, which means we think about the health of the people, so the farmers, the planet, and the animals when we address these issues. This one health model supports the multifaceted challenges on the landscape, and something that's particularly important is our ability to be nimble and respond to emerging issues. And one way that has happened has been with grain bin incidents this year. So after hearing from our stakeholders in our community that there was an important need for grain bin safety, we collaborated with our partners, so think Extension, think Grain Bin Safety Handling Coalition, to produce a checklist. This helps build on awareness and general precautions, which these activities alone can greatly reduce risk in operations that have things like silos or grain bin facilities. For the sake of time, I will mostly glaze over this, but I do want to thank the state of Minnesota, particularly the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, for their work on stress and mental health initiatives in the past few years. So in closing, I want to discuss how important it is to have responsive teams. Many of the people in the room are the stakeholders that we need to create safer landscapes for farmers. These include many of the organizations listed on the screen, but these organizations have influence, and these institutions really help change the culture to create a safety culture on farms. So in closing, I encourage and support broad initiatives that support outreach, education, training, and other initiatives like this. We really need to consider One Health approaches that do things like help farms identify hazards, provide appropriate intervention and control measures, and also engage the community as we're really doing today. Alone, we don't have the expertise, but in this community, we have what we need to handle the present and evolving changes and issues in agriculture. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And we're going to actually go next to the commissioner, and then there will be maybe some questions after that. So,
sure. Great.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Poppy, and the other members of the committee. I thought it was important today that the Department of Labor and Industry be present, and I've been advised by my staff that they don't think that the department has ever appeared before this committee before. And even looking at the presentations and the earlier discussions, it's pretty apparent to me that my agency is absent. We're not amongst the identified partners. We're not included in the group of folks that are collaborators with various programs, and this is not a good thing. So the Department of Labor and Industry is the agency who is primarily responsible for occupational safety and health in the state, yet we're not present here. So consequently, it's really important, I think, to begin to have an opportunity to at least introduce my agency to all of you so that you understand who we are and what we do and how we could be a partner, how we could be a trusted partner, a valued partner, an expert partner in responding to the challenges that we're facing not only in grain bins but for the many other people in Minnesota who are working on farms, who own farms, or members of farm families and farm communities who have suffered fatalities and have suffered other serious injuries that often make the difference between making it and not making it. So consequently, the Department of Labor and Industry, we have our OSHA program. In Minnesota, we are what's called a state plan state, which means that in 1974, we thought occupational safety and health was important enough in Minnesota that we basically developed a state program that allowed us to take responsibility away from the federal government and move it to here so we could concentrate on those issues that were important to Minnesotans when it comes to occupational safety and health. As part of that program, we have two key units. We have the compliance unit, which is the one that is responsible for education and outreach, is responsible for responding to accidents and injuries, and also for doing targeted investigations in sectors where we know there are occupational safety and health issues, in large part because of their high fatality and injury and illness rates. That part of our program works to develop alliances with industries, like very strong alliances we have in construction, to work with industry partners, to work with industry organizations, to work with employee and employers to improve the safety and health in that sector. So that is our compliance program. We also have a consultation program. The consultation program is a free, voluntary, and confidential program where the department works primarily with small businesses to help them improve the occupational safety and health in their workplaces. So this is a free program. Basically, employers, we do a fair amount of outreach, but this is a place where employers can come to us and say, we have a particular issue we want to work on, or will you please do sort of a wall-to-wall survey and help us improve our occupational safety and health performance. As part of this program, we also have what's called the safety grants. So this is a grant program that's funded out of the workers' compensation system that basically allows for a dollar-to-dollar match for safety and health improvements made by small businesses as a result of a safety and health audit, either done by the department, done by basically their insurance representative, done by other entities in the state. So this program is infrequently used in the agricultural community, and the same is true for the grant program. I think the department fully recognizes that we are not a trusted partner, which is why when I became the Commissioner of Labor and Industry, because I've seen, agriculture is at the top of the injury and illness and fatality every single year, and it's not just here. It's in Wisconsin, it's in North and South Dakota, it's in around the world. Agriculture is the most hazardous sector in the world. So as a consequence, I felt that as commissioner, it was extremely important that we could no longer say it's acceptable that we're not a partner, that it's acceptable that we're not at the table, that it's acceptable that somehow we have not been able to build trust in the agricultural community so that our expertise, our experience, and our financial resources are not being utilized the way that they could be used. Our first call for help was with our partner, the Department of Agriculture. So we know you trust them, and so if we want to be trusted, we need to create relationships with who you do trust and offer our assistance to them in the first instance of how we can support the work that they are doing, and also to begin to reach out to the agricultural community and to organizations that work in that community to build trust with them also, and to begin to talk to them about how we can do our part. So I just wanted to take the opportunity for you today, because I think Landon's mother is absolutely right. She hit it right on the nail on the head, as to the fact that we are in a different time, We're in a different place, and related to what's going on in agriculture, and that there is a role for my agency to play. I mean, I'm going to get emotional. I see every injury and serious injury and fatality that occurs in this state comes to my email box every single day. To me, that's a failure of my agency, because all of these accidents are preventable. There's not a single person who gets injured and killed in this state, and some of them with very simple things that could be done, that those accidents and injuries could not be prevented. So I would like to hear from you to do whatever it is that my agency can do to be a partner in this effort. So thank you for the committee's time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your remarkable candor and your sincere interest in being part of the solution. So we very much appreciate that. We do have a couple of comments and questions. So I think first, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if we could ask Lisa Farm Bureau to, I don't even know if she knows about this program, but wondered if she was aware of an old Farm Bureau program.
Ms. Linetti. And as she's coming down, I just want to make a comment. You know, it was a few years ago, Representative Clark Johnson, and I know Representative Paul Anderson, who sits amongst us, was integral in getting the ROPS program started and initiated that. And this is in agriculture. We work together for the betterment of the industry. And so I just wanted to make sure that Representative Anderson, we appreciate the work that you did, and we appreciate that Representative Brand is carrying it forward based on the need. Ms. Linetti, I don't know if you heard the question, or she hasn't yet stated it.
I think I startled her. Ms. Linetti, can you tell me what Farm Bureau does now for farm education within our local farms as a organization? And are you aware of an old program that would be about 38 years ago?
Ms. Linetti?
Madam Chair, Representative Keel, I cannot speak to our activities from 38 years ago. But I certainly have an extensive list of our County Farm Bureau efforts in terms of farm safety. I touched on them a little bit earlier, but I'm happy to go into further detail if that's something the committee is interested in.
And Representative Keel?
Madam Chair, Ms. Leonetti, and members, audience here, long time ago, the reason I know it was 38 years ago is because my 40-year-old son was only 3. And Farm Bureau had developed a program by way of a doctor that was repairing people that got their arms and legs in augers and all kinds of awful accidents. And we did an education in our farm communities that explained to the farmers how to, you know, all of these things, the bin issues, the rollovers of tractors, augers, how to handle it, actually how to get somebody to the emergency room because ambulances wouldn't necessarily get there in the right amount of time. I'll tell you a brief story. My brother got his feet caught in a sugar beet lifter, and it wasn't intentional. Something moved, and he was able to keep himself up in the air. My father caught it and got him backed out of their rollers. So they roll together, and they're huge. They're not big, but they're very heavy. So they crushed his feet. And he lost some skin on that, and he's still farming, and I know he has some residual problems once in a while. But the importance of this is that they were able to actually transport him safely into the ambulance or into the emergency room before an ambulance would have gotten there. But more importantly, this program that was sponsored by, I can't even remember the doctor, he's probably retired now too, just the education locally to the protections that need to happen, knowing that you shouldn't climb a grain bin without someone knowing that you're going, at least going up in it, as well as going inside, and the other things that can happen. I mean, my brother's lost a whole hog barn because of methane poisoning. There was nothing they could do about it. The fan died. It was July and 90 degrees. The whole barn died. My brother almost walked into it, but the cat was dead on the door, which alerted him to say, something's not right here. And then he was able to open the barn and get the air moving. They weren't able to save the hogs. They lost the whole barn. But I want to point out, as a farmer, this is a dangerous business, and you have to be respectful of it and know the cautions. But education is, I think, our best friend in teaching people what they need to be doing and how they need to do it. And, of course, in the past, we learned a lot of these things, even though there were accidents, by generational, and we're not as much anymore learning those things. So, but I think we should look into some kind of an educational program that would probably help us. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. And we are over time, so I just want to appreciate that people are staying here to listen. Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Poppe. My first question, Chair Poppe, is, you know, we have the smallest budget. We in agriculture have the smallest budget of any other entity within the government. My first question is, do we know for sure if we're going to have a supplemental budget bill? I guess that's my question to you. And
so I'll just go ahead and say that we'll know with the forecast what the money availability might be, and it's anticipated that, you know, that we would have a slice of the pie if there is such a pie.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing that up. And Commissioner, I wanted you to hear that dialogue as well, because, again, the ag budget is very, very small. We've heard some very powerful testimony. And with the surplus and everything else, there should be no reason why we can't find funds somewhere to support this. Representative Brand, thank you for bringing this forward. On the bill that we just heard, would they qualify for the grant programs within your department in the event we weren't able to find the money with the supplemental budget bill?
Commissioner.
Chairman Poppe, Representative Hamilton. So the ability to access the assigned risk safety account is basically requires that you are an employer, and that you have, as an employer, you have a workers' compensation policy. Other than that, anyone can access both the assistance of the consultation unit that would, again, come in for free. There's no connection with compliance. You're not going to be issued a citation. You're not going to be, you know, by the agency. It's basically a service to come in, help you assess. So in the context of a grain bin, to be able to look at that grain bin to discuss what are some of the safety and health risks related to that grain bin, to identify what are improvements you could make. Based on those recommendations, then that farmer would be able to apply, and the department assists with that, for a grant from the assigned risk safety account. Right now, that account is a one-to-one match, so for every dollar the farmer would use, we would match the grant. The account can match. So so consequently, yes, if you employ at least one worker.
One of them.
Thank you.
And there's no need for an appropriation into that fund. That fund has sufficient resources that it can be used to support this work. It's also had some discussions with the Department of Agriculture about helping equip their staff with the necessary expertise and experience to similarly engage in this kind of consultation and assistance that could similarly be able to then access this funding. And the department is fully ready to support our colleagues at the Department of Agriculture in any such effort. We might need to look at a bit of some tweaks to the law, but really the pieces are in place to provide this kind of assistance, and it's not just grain bins. It can be, and again, it can be a full review of the operation, or it can be one particular issue that a farmer is concerned about and wants some assistance in figuring out what is the best solution or how to handle it, and it can go from equipment to even training. I mean, the full scope of the kinds of things that improve workplace safety and health to having an overall sort of a way of managing safety and health on your farm. So looking at even the conversation about the fan going out, you know, there's a variety of things that there's engineering controls and administrative controls and various kinds of personal protective equipment, all of which my agency is ready, willing, and able to provide assistance, and we're looking for a way to the table.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd just like to echo the words that have been spoken about offering our condolences. The testimony was extremely powerful. You have our attention. I believe everybody would say the same thing. Representative Brand, thank you for inviting your constituents up here as well and bringing this bill forward. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I think we have some final comments. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. Yeah, we all support this, but what I'm hearing, and Commissioner, thank you for being here today. It's a red-letter day here in our committee. But it sounds to me like you have to have an employee, and as a smaller family farm that does not have employees, we may need to tweak something to make a smaller family farm eligible for these grants from the Department of Labor and Industry. And I would just add that when we did this program, the rollover program, 4 years ago now, Minnesota wonderfully is home to some great ag corporations. I think Land O'Lakes, CHS, Cargill, some great people, and they all came to the table and donated money to make this program, some seed money to make this program go. And at the dairy reception the other day, I think it was Ag Country, somebody said that they're going to offer their customers a harness set for their grain bins free of charge. You know, it's just great to hear that private industry and business is stepping up and helping with this situation as well. So just want to offer that, but there are others out there, not only just the government, that are willing to help with this kind of a program.
Absolutely. Thank you. So thank you, Commissioner, and thank you again for committee members for being here a little bit over our time, but we appreciate, you know, the opportunity to hear from the testimony that we heard today. And so with that, meeting is adjourned.